Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to Conversations with Heroes on Israel News Talk Radio. I'm your host, Heather Dean. Not only is my special guest on today's show a well-known hero among Jewish communities everywhere, he is a respected lawyer, author, and historian. I am speaking about Rabbi Bera Wein. On today's program, I'm on location at the home of Rabbi Wein, and there are books everywhere, organized immaculately on shelves in just about every room. We're talking holy books, biographies, scholarly books, and dozens of books authored by writers who are hoping to get Rabbi Wein's feedback and maybe a recommendation. Rabbi Wein himself has authored several books about Jewish history and popularized the subject of Jewish history through more than 1,000 audio tapes and newspaper articles and his lectures all over the world. A quick check of Wikipedia will give you a whole history of Rabbi Wein's career highlights, but I want to skip to 1997. This is when Rabbi Wein and his Rebbetzin Jackie Wein of blessed memory, they moved to Israel, and to the this day, Rabbi Wein leads the congregation of Beit Knesset Hanasi in the Rehavia neighborhood of Jerusalem. 1997 is also when Rabbi Wein established the Destiny Foundation, and that's a platform from which audiences and students everywhere can access his CDs, audio tapes, as well as drama and documentary film projects. Always busy and in demand, Rabbi Wein is a senior faculty member of Or Samach Yeshiva in Jerusalem, and he writes a regular weekly column for the Jerusalem Post. On today's show, Rabbi Wein and I will discuss current events and how history affects our outlook on current events and what he makes of today's tumultuous and often brutal world that we live in. You can read a sizable sampling of Rabbi Wein's most recent essays and also check out the dates and locations of Rabbi Wein's upcoming lectures and tours by visiting his website, rabbiwein.com. That's RABBIWEIN.com. And to learn more about the Destiny Foundation's projects, videos, and updates, you can visit jewishdestiny.com. If you'd like to comment on today's show, send me an email at heather@israelnewstalkradio.com. When we come back after a short break, fasten your seatbelts. It's time to check in with Rabbi Bera Wein on Conversations with Heroes. Stay with us.
Jew haters, beware. Political hitman is here. Who's in my crosshairs? Who's in my hot seat? I'm Howie Silberger. Join me Sundays at noon Eastern, 7 Israeli, and Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 9 Israeli, for Political Hitman, only on Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Conversations with Heroes on Israel News Talk Radio. I'm Heather Dean. My very special guest today is Rabbi Bera Wein. You'll find dozens of Rabbi Wein's articles as well as updates on where and when Rabbi Wein is scheduled to speak at his website, rabbiwein.com. That's RABBIWEIN.com. And for details about the Destiny Foundation's projects and videos, you can visit jewishdestiny.com. Welcome to Conversations with Heroes, Rabbi Bera Wein.
Pleasure.
Rabbi Wein, you've been called the voice of Jewish history by many scholars, and you have said history is our rear view mirror. What does that mean, a rear view mirror?
Well, if you drive an automobile and you never look in your rear view mirror, you're bound to get into problems. And history is the rear view mirror of the Jewish people, because it tells us where we've been, and to a certain extent, where it's safe to go, and it identifies for us the problems that exist in the traffic of society.
You've also said that what each Jew does has cosmic influence. We have eternity built within us. I wonder if you could talk about that, because each one of us individual, at some point, many points in our lives, think, really, what I do, it doesn't matter so much. But you say otherwise.
Well, Judaism does not believe that there are things that are just ordinary. We're put here for a purpose, and every person searches for his or her purpose. And therefore, whatever we do is important because we're fulfilling the purpose that God put us here on earth. Mm-hmm. And many times the purpose is to be nice to a person and not cut into the line.
Right.
Or many times the purpose is to give a poor man a half a shekel. Mm-hmm. And many times it's to do what we consider to be a great thing, like to decide on a political matter or something like that. But we don't have the measure of what is a great thing and what is a small thing. That's not granted to us. And many times we find throughout the Bible and we find throughout the Talmud that the small things are the big things.
Right.
For instance, I always use the example of Joseph is searching for his brothers. He can't find them. He meets a man in the field, and the man says, "Your brothers, they went there. Mm-hmm. Who's this man?
Right.
Why does the Torah bother to tell us about him even?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You could just say Joseph is looking for his brothers.
Right.
That man fulfilled a cosmic purpose.
Mm-hmm.
If he would not have been there, and if he would not have given the directions, so all of history would have changed, right? Joseph wouldn't have gone to Egypt, although somehow the story would have had to be different.
Right.
So there are no accidental people, and there are no items that are completely unimportant. Now, certainly certain things are more important than others, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who a person marries is more important than what he orders at the restaurant, I hope. But there really are no inconsequential, because we don't know what the results of our behavior, of what we do or what we say. We don't know how we affect others. We don't know how we affect generations. Mm-hmm. And Judaism always believes that we're playing a long-term game, not a short-term game. And in a long-term game, it's hard to know right now what's going to be, 100 years from now.
Right.
What are my great-great-grandchildren going to do? But I have a chance to influence them.
You know, on the topic of Jewish destiny, so there are people who are Jewish, but they may not be outwardly Jewish or may not be as observant as they could be, meaning if a person's just not interested in following Jewish laws or think they don't even apply to them. And there's a remark that you made once in a speech where you said those who thought they could escape Jewish destiny by being less Jewish, which I took to mean in their observance, turned to ashes. So this is a remarkable historical statement, because over history there certainly are Jews who were less Jewish, quote, in their observance.
In the bitter history of the Jewish people, for whatever reason, our enemies have never differentiated between those who are too Jewish and those who are not Jewish in their behavior or appearance. And people who were completely German were eliminated in the Holocaust just as much as Hasidic Jews were.
Right.
We have a common destiny. We have a common bond. It's interesting, the world sees it much more clearly than the Jews see it.
Right.
The world is aware that, that we're all somehow bound together, and that what one does affects everyone. Right. We don't see it because we think we're independent contractors.
You know, the generation that I come from, my parents' generation, grandparents' generation, they were, grandparents were immigrants from Russia and Austro-Hungary. And so the name that I was born into, the family name Dean, so that was a name that was shortened by my father. And there are many Jews who emigrated to the United States, and again during the industrial era and so on, that also shortened their names, anglicized their names. And it goes along the lines of appearing less Jewish and not wanting to be part of the generation that went through pogroms again, or not wanting to be part of the World War II generation again. So there are steps people have taken to anglicize their name or to distance themselves from their Jewish observance.
I don't know if that's really as much to distance themselves mm-hmm. from being Jewish as it is to be accepted in American society.
Okay.
You can be very Jewish and your name doesn't have to be Goldberg. You know, mm-hmm. and I think of the ad in the New York subway that you don't have to be Jewish to enjoy Levy's rye bread. Mm-hmm. Well, that has manifestations that mm-hmm. There's no question that people change their names. I mean, Edward G. Robinson would not have been Edward G. Robinson if he would have remained Emmanuel Goldfish.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Sure. But that is not necessarily fatal to being Jewish. Mm-hmm. What is fatal to being Jewish is complete ignorance of Judaism, a complete blank about the past. I mean, it's literally amnesia, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's where the problem. I know many good, observant Jews, both here in Israel and in the United States, who don't have the last names. You know, last names weren't that important to mm-hmm. the Jewish people in Europe. Mm-hmm. People changed their last names for various reasons. If you were in Russia, for instance, if you were an only son, you were exempt from the army. Hmm. So if a man had four sons, every one of them had a different last name. Because he didn't want his sons to go to the army.
Right.
The Russian army was 25 years and people didn't survive it. So last names, until the 1800s, Jews were forced to take last names. Until then, they had no last names.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the governments would often assign them.
And they assigned them because mm-hmm. they want to identify them, like in the Austro-Hungarian Empire, where you say your ancestors came from, if you didn't take a name that the government liked, so they assigned you a name. So the name Klein meant you were small, Gross meant you were big, Weiss meant you were fair, white, and Schwartz meant that you were dark.
Mm-hmm.
Those were the four names that were given to Jews.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know particular holiness to the last name. The holiness is what you do with yourself.
Right, right. There have been, over the course of history, since there's been a diaspora, there have been host countries that take in Jews. And my understanding is that the United States is the one country that have been a host country for Jews that hasn't thrown them out in some point or another.
In the Middle Ages, Jews were expelled from almost every place where they were. In the modern times, so again, that has happened, in the Second World War. Almost all the countries in Europe, with the exception of Great Britain, of England, expelled Jews.
Right.
There were other Scandinavian countries, that Sweden, etc., that then accepted Jews. But the Jews never really felt at home because of the treatment that they received on the United States. Even though the United States has had and continues to have undercurrents of anti-Semitism and anti-Jewishness, and nevertheless, for Jews, it has been more or less a level playing field. Jews have a chance. They have a chance to be whatever they want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the difference between the United States and all the other places. Jew never dreamt that one could be the leader of the countries in Europe without converting or without having to discard all traces of Jewishness. Mm-hmm. I think that one of the great ironies is that Joseph Lieberman, who...
Right, the senator from Connecticut.
Right, who was going to be elected, who almost was the vice president of the United States. Right. The first Jew who would reach such a level would be an Orthodox Jew who observes Torah.
Right, right. Well, I want to get back after break and discuss more about the climate of Jewish populations around the world. So, folks, stay tuned for more of my conversation with Rabbi Beryl Wein on Conversations with Heroes.
Hey, it's Ari Fuld at Israel News Talk Radio. If you, like me, are sick and tired, if you've had enough of listening to all the anti-Israel lies and propaganda that's being spread online and offline, in the press, in the newspapers, on TV channels, in the newsrooms across the world, tune into my weekly show, Bulletproof, on Thursdays at 5 p.m. as we discover, expose, and completely destroy all anti-Israel lies and propaganda. And we're going to do it with just the truth. As an active IDF reserve soldier, an elite paratroopers unit, I will try to give you an inside look to the opinions of the men and women of the IDF on the situation. Bulletproof will give you the tools. More importantly, will give you the weapons to take down all anti-Israel activists, no matter where you meet them. Tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m. Israel time to Bulletproof on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
Welcome back to Conversations with Heroes on Israel News Talk Radio. I'm Heather Dean, and my guest today is Rabbi Beryl Wein. As I mentioned before, you'll find dozens of Rabbi Wein's articles as well as updates on where and when Rabbi Wein is scheduled to speak at his website, rabbiwein.com. And for details about the Destiny Foundation's projects and videos, you can visit jewishdestiny.com. Welcome back, Rabbi Wein. We were talking about the climate in the United States for the Jewish population, the climate around the world. Now, when the American presidential election was going on in 2016, you didn't endorse a presidential candidate.
No.
And I'm wondering now that we know, now that we have President Trump in office, if you have any thoughts, predictions?
We always have to hope for the best. It's very hard to assess whether or not a leader is good or not good immediately. For instance, I think the jury on President Obama will be out for a long time.
Right.
Whether or not it took a long time to understand that Jimmy Carter wasn't a good president. But I think that that's pretty well accepted across the board already. Mm-hmm. History as a way of having the final vote, so to speak.
You've written that the United States is experiencing a period of racial tension and a throwback to a similar situation a half century ago. And, you know, Iran blatantly continues its aggressive military buildup. There's chaos and uncertainty all over the world. And I'm just wondering if, from a historical perspective, if it's more than ever cataclysmic.
Well, it's never more than ever because we've always been in this movie before. Mm. But what it is, it's more dangerous than ever. There wasn't a time that, if Iran was Iran 100 years ago, so that was a local problem. It was a war, it was whatever. Mm-hmm. But Iran today can blow up the whole world. That's a different scenario. North Korea can blow up the whole world.
So it's not just the Crusades
it's far different. Mm-hmm. It's far more dangerous. Mm-hmm. But even though the motives and everything else are the same, even the mechanics of how it unfolds are the same, but the end result, God forbid, can be enormously more dangerous.
You had a very interesting essay when this was about a month ago, it was a few weeks ago, there was a photo op with the Pope and Mahmoud Abbas. They're both smiling. The Palestinian Authority had established an embassy in the Vatican City. And you had said that historically it may not be so consequential, but the photo op itself with the two of them smiling that spoke?
Well, I don't know how to put it, but neither of them are happy that there's a state of Israel or that we're having this radio program now. The Catholic Church has a theological problem with us. Theologically, we never were supposed to return to the land of Israel. We're never supposed to enjoy independence and success because we rejected the Christian Savior. And that was Catholic doctrine for a long, long time. Now it's been readjusted. Pope John Paul readjusted it, etc. But deep down in the reaches of the Catholic clergy, etc., which is more conservative, it still exists. Mahmoud Abbas has the same problem.
Absolutely.
The problem is that how did this happen, right? I mean, the Jews are infidels. And they're not supposed to have anything. And the land of Israel, the city of Jerusalem, is, so to speak, Muslim property. It's consecrated. So how did this happen? Mm-hmm. And the only way, therefore, to correct it is to make it unhappen. Mm-hmm. And it's a struggle, right? There's no question that, you know, we're not about to just walk away. So it would take a tremendous readjustment. Now, the church has made some readjustment. The church, for instance, recognizes the state of Israel, mm-hmm. and has diplomatic relations with the state of Israel. It's something which 50 years ago was absolutely unbelievable and unthought of. Mm-hmm. But the church is hypocritical, in my opinion, because the Palestinian Authority has persecuted Christians. I don't have the exact figures, but tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of Christians have left the area. I mean, if you want to see Beit Hanina, you got to go to Chile. Mm-hmm. So to ignore what the Muslim world has done to the Christians who have lived for centuries within the Muslim world, mm-hmm. and just like today, many of the Syrian refugees are Christians, and many of the Iraqis are Christians, and they've been driven out by the Muslims as a matter of religion. Mm-hmm. Not because they're criminals or they did mm-hmm. things that were wrong, mm-hmm. but just simply as a matter of religion because they're infidels. So to me, that's hypocritical. He recognizes the Palestinian state. I mean, the Vatican itself is not the player that it once was.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So it's not as disturbing as it once was. But when Herzl came to Pope Leo X to plead the Zionist cause, so the Pope told him that the only solution to the Jewish problem is that all the Jews should convert to Christianity. Mm. I don't think the present Pope would say that,
right.
But I think there are echoes of that that are still present.
There's a lot of use of the word settlements. It's been going on for years, but it gets bandied about a lot, the settlements, the settlers, settlement construction. And recently, President Trump is quoted to have said, depending on your source, but most sources, most newspapers, will say that his quote is settlement construction is unhelpful to peace and that Israel should act reasonably. That doesn't exactly sound like the platform that he ran on about...
Well, President Trump is a politician like all politicians.
Mm-hmm.
And he's subject to all sorts of pressures. I think it's unreasonable to think that the American State Department, that since the 1940s has opposed the state of Israel one way or another, is going to change their mind simply because President Trump is in power. And I don't think that... Even if he wanted to, I don't think he can mm-hmm. put it through. But what do you call settlement construction, right? If If you build an extra room on your apartment in Har-Nof in Jerusalem, which Har-Nof did not exist before the 67 war, is that settlement construction? I think the definition of settlement construction is that we're making a new settlement. We're taking over a piece of empty land, and we're going to make a new city, a new town, etc. That the Israeli government has not done for decades, and is not about to do now either. Mm-hmm. So when you talk about settlement construction, you're talking about natural growth. George Bush gave a letter to the Israeli government that he understood that natural growth naturally has to happen. So it depends on your definition of settlement construction. Right. And so I don't know what Trump means by it. But I am convinced that this is going to be, this is like a straw man issue that has existed all the time. The basic issue between Israel and the Palestinians is, do the Jews have a right to have an independent state here? If the answer to that is yes, so then everything else can be arranged. And in fact, everybody knows what the arrangement will be. Mm-hmm. Give or take, a few yards on the ground. But if the answer is no, so then what's it got to do with settlements or with anything else? That's right, all just right. A straw man.
It's a smokescreen, if anything. What is it, historically, I'm wondering what your thoughts are on this, that some of the most contested land in Israel are lands where there is documentation and deeds of purchases, usually at way more than what the market value, so to speak, was. And that includes Hebron, the Temple Mount, and also Shechem, Nablus. Right? So this is written in holy books, Jewish sources, the Torah, that these were purchased with deeds. Yet these are such contested, of the contested lands.
Well, you've got basically a religious issue here. Mm-hmm. There's nothing, it's not a land issue, it's not deeds. Right. The question is, who is Abraham's son? Is it Isaac or is it Ishmael? That's what the whole Hebron issue is. Mm-hmm. And the issue of Nablus is, again, the story of Joseph. And Jerusalem and the Temple Mount is also, that's the exact, the Muslims say there never was a temple. Because if there was a temple, then maybe the Jews have a right to be here, mm-hmm. etc. So that's the basic issue, and I don't know how to address that issue. I don't know how to solve it. I don't think Trump does either.
Rabbi Wein will continue more in a moment. We'll take a break, folks. Stay tuned for more Conversations with Heroes, Mike Talk with Rabbi Beryl Wein.
This message, everyone else can too. Advertise with Israel News Talk Radio and get your message out to people. We'll build a personalized package for you. Contact advertising@israelnewstalkradio.com.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio. Please consider supporting our advertisers who help keep us on the air so you can listen for free. Thank you.
I used to get up all the time at night to go to the bathroom. And have to take numerous breaks at work as well. But not anymore. I found what some people claim is a miracle cure from Israel. It's made from the cactus flower called Opuntuma. It's an all-natural and herbal remedy that helps with urinary problems, and it's really helped me. No more embarrassing trips to the bathroom. Get it at priso.com. That's PRISSO.com.
Well, Welcome back to Conversations with Heroes on Israel News Talk Radio. I'm your host, Heather Dean, speaking with my guest, Rabbi Beryl Wein. Rabbi Wein, tell me about a story. You've spoken about it publicly before, but it's such an interesting story from when you were a boy in yeshiva, and you had a visit from a very important rabbi who had met with a very important figure.
And immediately after the Holocaust, I think 46, the great chief rabbi then of Palestine, later he was the first chief rabbi of Israel, Ashkenazic, Rabbi Isaac Alevi Herzog, traveled to America to raise funds on behalf of the refugees and what was going on. And he came to Chicago. And I remember my father, who was a rabbi in Chicago, took me to the airport to greet him. He had this great aristocratic figure, the top hat and the silver cane, and he had a Bible in one hand. It was very impressive. And we went to the yeshiva in Chicago. And he delivered a lecture in Talmud in Yiddish for about 45 minutes. And there were about 200 of us in the audience. That was the entire student body. And that was the student body, not just of Chicago. It was the entire Midwest then.
Oh, my.
In Detroit and St. Louis and Minneapolis, Indianapolis, I mean, we had students from Peoria. It was just, you know, because it was the only ball game in town. And he, after he finished his lecture in Yiddish, he had previously been the chief rabbi of Ireland in Dublin. He spoke a perfect English. He said, "I want to speak to the young men." And he said to us, "I have just returned from visiting the Pope of Rome." It was Pius the 12th then. And I gave him a document that had 10,000 names of Jewish children who had been sequestered in Catholic institutions during the World War in order to save them from the Germans. And I asked him to please give me back the children. And the Pope told me that he would not do so because anyone that was baptized in the Catholic Church, and all the children when they came in to the Catholic institutions were immediately baptized. Said anyone that was baptized in the Catholic Church should not, cannot be given to be raised in a different faith. When he said that, he put his head down on the lectern and he wept. I had never seen a grown man weep that way. The whole 2,000 years poured out of him. And then he raised himself and he looked around the room and he said, "I can't do anything more for those 10,000 children. But what are you going to do for the Jewish people? What are you going to do to help rebuild us?" And later on, when we went to shake his hand and receive a blessing from him, I was a little kid, I was 11 years old, 12 years old. He said to me, he said, "Did you hear what I said? Remember what I said. Don't forget what I said." So, you know, I've been a rabbi a long time, 60 years in the Jewish world. And Jewish people are not an easy people to be a rabbi for. So there are many days that one really wants to chuck the whole thing. But I always hear him in my ears, "Remember what I said." And I think that that applies to all of us, to each and every one of us. What are you going to do? And everybody can do something in whatever facet of life they find themselves. We all have the opportunity to do something. And I really think that That certainly was what rebuilt the Jewish people after the Holocaust. And it certainly is what's necessary now to build us and strengthen us.
Rabbi Wein, you've given so much wisdom, knowledge to the Jewish people as part of your input. Also, of course, through the prism of history, you've made history accessible for so many students everywhere. One of the things that is available to us on rabbiwein.com, your website, is you update it weekly with an article, lessons from the Torah, and this is just one part of what you've done in fulfilling Rabbi Herzog's plea. I'm just wondering, is that a lot of pressure to come up with this much material on a weekly basis? Do you ever get writer's block?
Terrible. Everybody has writer's block.
Okay.
But somehow, things happen to me, as I mentioned before, everyday things. Mm-hmm. And when I think about it, that it no longer is such an everyday thing. And I'm able to write about that, about mm-hmm. Small incidents in life that have big lessons. And now there's no question that if you have to produce every week, sometimes they are of uncertain quality, but we try our best.
Okay. You founded the Destiny Foundation. The goal is, I understand, to reach through a variety of media, students everywhere, audiences everywhere, on so many lessons from the Torah, especially history. Tell me, what are some of the notable achievements that Destiny
has? Well, we're 25 years old now. This mm-hmm. is our anniversary. We've made full-length movies, biographical movies about great Jewish figures that have had a very wide circulation, mm-hmm. especially in schools, but in other venues as well. We have over 1,000 different lectures on tape, on CD, and DVD regarding almost every facet of Jewish life and knowledge. We have 15 books. There's a great deal of material and especially people who commute, I find that they're a big audience.
Right, for sure they listen. You know, one of the things I just want to mention regarding movies, you once said to an audience in South Africa before the screening of one of the movies that what they're about to see is a family movie. Why do you call it a family movie?
Because it's our family. The Jewish people are a family. And you want to understand Maimonides, well, I'll tell you his story, right? Because mm-hmm. he's your ancestor. Mm-hmm. And Rashi is your ancestor. I mean, you want to know where you come from. Part of the problem in our time is that people really don't know where they came from. They didn't know their grandparents. They didn't know their great-grandparents. They didn't know the stories. So then you operate in a vacuum, It's very hard. So, but it's our family. We're a family. So in every family, there's a crazy uncle, and there's a cousin that goes bankrupt. That's also part of our family.
Mm-hmm.
But it's our family, and I think if you have that sense within you, it's much easier to deal with the Jewish world and with the non-Jewish world as well.
Right. You've written an autobiography. You've also written a book, Tending the Vineyard, which is your experiences as a rabbi of a congregation. You've also said, and you've, in lectures, sometimes you've tiptoed around this, the difficulties in being the rabbi of a congregation because of the political nature of it.
It's not only the political nature, it's the personal nature there.
Mm-hmm.
There are people that they cannot find expression for their frustrations at home
Uh-oh.
Or in their workplace. So then they find the expression of their frustration in the synagogue and at the rabbi. And so the question is, how seriously you take it? You know, I have steeled myself long ago that I don't take things personally. They're not talking to me.
Right.
He had a fight with his wife in the morning, so, you know, it's got not my problem. I didn't do it. But, you know, I met a man on the street once, and he said to me, Rabbi, I didn't like what you said on Saturday. And I told him I didn't like it either, but I had to speak, and you didn't. Right. Now, you know, he didn't like it, so he didn't like it. To be a rabbi means that you have to have a sense of vision and purpose. What do you want to accomplish at the end? And if that it always remains your focus, so then the other stuff is just you slough it off to the best that you can.
Right. But I would imagine there's also feedback from congregants that it does make it worthwhile.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've had a very easy ride in the rabbinate. I've been basically a rabbi in four places. Mm-hmm. So I was a rabbi in Chicago. I was fired from that position.
Oh, my.
But I was a rabbi in Miami Beach, which was a wonderful experience. Mm-hmm. I was a rabbi in Muncie, New York, which was a wonderful experience. And I'm a rabbi here in Rehavia in Jerusalem, which is also a wonderful experience. I have had an easy ride, really.
Mm-hmm. Rabbi Wein, it's been a wonderful experience for me to speak with you, and I thank you so much for joining us today on Conversations with Heroes. Folks, that'll do it for us today. Stay tuned for more Straight Talk from Israel here on Israel News Talk Radio. Thanks for listening.
G'day dear listeners, join Jason and Jono on our new program entitled Israel on My Mind, a show where we highlight humorous and happy news stories relating to the people and state of Israel. Listen every Thursday at 7 p.m. Israel time exclusively here on Israel News Talk Radio.
You can join us anytime by listening on demand to Israel News Talk Radio and join in the conversation on our Facebook page. Just search for Israel on My Mind. If you have any questions or comments, then feel free to leave them in the comment section below and maybe you'll be featured on the show.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.